Hi everyone. Before we kick off with the show, I just want to let you know that this week's episode has been dedicated to Alex Suarez, who tragically lost his life on Friday the 16th of July 2021.
This conference will now be recorded.
It's always good when it says that. Hello, guys, welcome back to another episode of Making Lemonade. So this is Making Lemonade podcast with me, as ever, Gaz Simpson. Just to kind of remind everyone why we're doing this, you know, it's become really, really prevalent, I would say, in the past couple of weeks, just with the amount of lads and lasses who kind of reach out to us direct and saying, hey, listen, love what you're doing. I'm ready to talk, but I'm not ready to talk on this platform. Let's have a chat. So it's all about breaking that stigma of the broken soldier. Like, all we're good for is, you know, shop security you know, factory working. And that's great if that's what you're doing and that's what you enjoy doing as well. But when you first come out of the forces and you suddenly start to deal with, already you've got lots and lots happening, and then all of a sudden you've got to contend with these different types of stereotypes, it can be a bit of a pain in the arse, really, when it comes down to those things. So I'm joined today, very excited to be joined today by Lee McFarland. So for those of you who don't know Lee or haven't seen him around, he's ex One Para. Spent about, I think it was like 5 years in One Para. Came out, did a number of private security deployments out in all the usual holiday destinations, Iraq, Afghanistan, and used that to kind of reevaluate what's been going on, retrain himself, re-educate himself, and has now made a very successful career in project management, IT management. It's had its ups and downs. It's had its highlights for sure. I think Y2K was one of the companies that he founded, and he's now heading up delivery at a very well-known brand. So I'm really looking forward to finding out exactly what makes Lee tick, explore some of the challenges, and hopefully help everyone else overcome them before we step into them again. Lee, over to you, mate.
Yeah, no, so thank you guys for inviting me on. So, yes, yeah, so let me give you a bit of history about myself. So joined the army at 16, didn't do very well at school. You know, I wasn't very academic. I was a little shit, to be honest with you. You know, always in fights, you know, been expelled for a number of schools. So there wasn't really much left for me to do other than, you know, following the family footsteps and join the army. So yeah, I joined up at 16. I went to the Army Foundation College, run obviously in the year, you know, at the college itself, based up in Harrogate. You know, I had some struggles initially when I joined. You know, there was this rebel from Bristol. You know, thought he was a bit of a lad. So you know, my initial couple of months in the army was not the best. You know, I had more show teams than I think I had hot dinners. So done that, and then obviously went off to Cartrick, done obviously P Company, so parachute selection. You know, passed first time, again, met a load of good lads. So those relationships you created back then, you know, I've been able to, you know, foster them all the way through to where I am today. So yeah, joined One Power 2000, year 2000, and then basically, you know, done my obviously normal stuff within battalion, number of exercises, done a deployment to Iraq in 2003. You know, and then I was approached in 2005 to obviously leave the regiment and go and join, you know, a private security company out in Iraq. So I decided to get out. I, again, during my military career, there was ups and downs. You know, constantly fighting down the town, you know, so, yeah. You know, I had a bit of stigma around my name for that. So, you know, when I approached the RSM and the CEO about leaving, they were like, yeah, go, we're okay with you.
Like, oh, thank God.
You were social hand grenades, get out. But yeah, so I was, you know, and it was fortunate because I was, you know, I didn't do the year transition. I didn't do that whole year. I didn't have a transition period. I was literally
just out then.
Yeah, so it was just that, which was great because, you know, the company that approached me at the time were like, well, we need you ASAP, you know, and yeah, it was fortunate. So I didn't do any transition, but also, you know, speaking to people, you know, year transition can be helpful, but it can also be very daunting, you know, so I was, you know, I didn't have that luxury or, you know, that benefit. So, yeah, when I come back, you know, done a number of years with different companies, again, ups and downs with, you know, working, you know, abroad, you know, doing 8 weeks on or 9 weeks on, 3 weeks off, you know, it's great for the money because back in 2005, the money that was being offered for Primus Cook was exceptional. Yeah. You were talking about $5,600 a day.
Yeah, I think we were talking about that just before as well. Like, it costs with private security. Overseas, it's usually you'll spend 9 months out of the country, and then and that's on like a fairly hectic rotation, isn't it? So then you're talking realistically, you've got 3 months back in the country. It's quite a pain in the ass, mate.
I think we were saying, guys, you know, you earn all this mega money, you're not spending really when you're away. When you come home, you've got a bank balance, just you've never seen it before. You know, got out as a Tom, so I was generally on about £1,500 a month in the red. Then all of a sudden, I'm going over and I've got like 15 grand in the bank, and I'm thinking, I'm going out again in 3 weeks, might as well just spunk it.
I
was 21, and you know, I was doing well. But again, as a young lad, you know, I didn't have anyone mentoring me and saying, actually, what about, you know, putting some money in savers? What about doing this? I just didn't think about it back then. You know, I was going out, as you know, 2005, 2006 were dangerous years in Iraq, especially on private security. You know, they just bought in the FPs, so, you know, we were getting smashed constantly. So I was going over and I was thinking, yes, I'm just going to piss it up the wall, go on holidays, fast cars, you know, as you said, smoking cigars. You know, instead of going in and buying a pint, you're buying a bottle of champers. But again, I think, you know, because I didn't have, you know, that mentor, that, you know, that someone saying to me, or, you know, people looking out for me, because again, I was, you know, coming from a single parent background, you know, I kind of just went wayward with it, you know, and I think as much as I look back, I don't think there's regrets there, but I wish I was a bit more, you know, mature. But, you know, being 21, you know, it would have been great if someone actually just looked out for me a little bit more, you know, and I'm not saying that's a, you know, it's on anyone, but again, I think just the way I was, you know, with school and, you know, the military, I just didn't have that foresight. I didn't have the you know, understanding of, you know, what I should be doing. So yeah, done that for a number of years, you know, done Iraq, done Afghan. And then I kind of, what happened was, is I met someone in Iraq, Gaz, a guy called Gaz, and he was the IT manager. Yeah, I know, right? He was the IT manager for Heart Security at the time. And, you know, we started talking about courses, how we got into IT. And I thought, you know what? I might have a go at this. This sounds like something, you know, it's because I started thinking then, you know, you got to remember, I'm, you know, getting into my late 20s, early 30s. And I'm thinking, I can't be doing this. I can't be going away for 9 months of the year. You know, I've got a daughter and everything else. So I just started, you know, and because I'd grown up a lot more over those years, I started looking at what my aim was. So again, I spoke to Gaz, and Gaz, you know, mentioned some courses. So when I come home, what I did is I set myself a plan. I actually done myself a kind of career plan, where I wanted to be and how I was going to get there. So we trained in IT. Now, I spent about 15 to 20 grand of my own money because I didn't understand at the time. I just thought, I have to pay for these courses, get these courses done, and then I'm going to be on 70, 80 grand a year, because if you look at those certifications that you get on a job search site, they show you. And in my head, I've been, yeah, once I'm certified, I can get that money.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize.
This is definitely how it works.
I'm the all-knowing. So I kind of done that. And what I realized very, very quickly was that actually, as much as I was certified, I didn't have the experience. So then you try applying for jobs, and because you're certified but you've got no experience, people just don't hire you. So you go through that whole minefield, and I ended up going back out to Afghan because I just thought this isn't going to work for me. I just, I knew what I was doing, but I just didn't have that experience.
Yeah.
So that for me was at that point I was like, well, I'm only good for security. That's it. I got all these IT certifications and stuff, and so I went back out to Afghan. I kind of just felt like, this is me. I've got nothing else that, that I'm really able to do. But what happened was because I'd submitted my CV to a load of job boards around IT, I was actually, someone emailed me and said, look, we're really interested. We know you've got no experience, but we'd like to grow that experience for you. So I ended up starting with a really small, it was only four people in the business or the company, IT company. And, I started on an IT support desk, just picking up the phone going, good morning, Lee. How can I help you? I can't log in. And but it was a start for me. As much, I went from earning 70 to 80 grand a year doing security to earning £22,000 in London. At the time, 22 grand in London, you can't do anything. You're going to get, a room share, all of these other stuff. So there's just a lot of pressure on you. But I just knew it is what I wanted to do. So what I started doing was obviously meeting people, within the IT industry. And because after the first 6-7 months within the company, started meeting other people within the IT industry. And I spent a year at the company, and I moved to a law firm, where again, I picked up that experience. I kind of took that step up. So I started running projects, small projects. And I realized that actually it wasn't IT I was interested in. It was project management, because it became very, very apparent with my skill set for the military and my own personality, that actually project management was it was a different challenge every day. You're dealing with risks, you're dealing with, people, you're dealing with, issues. And that's exactly what we do in a day-to-day, day-to-day in the military. And because I'll be honest with you, I felt like I was institutionalized, and the army does institutionalize you. So you're very process-driven.
Especially with yourself, mate. I mean, I caught that, there's a lot to digest just in that piece there, really. So was it your old man who was ex forces as well? Yeah.
So he was back in the day, Royal Corps Transport Hat. he was RCT. So my mum left us when I was two. So it was me and my brother. My brother was bomb power as well. So
led you to Reg then? Right.
Do you know what it was? My dad went to do P company and he failed. So it was always even in when my brother was out. My dad always said, growing up, that a parachute regiment was the best regiment in the British Army. And that for me was, I always wanted to be, whatever I do in life, I try and, strive to be the best. There was that, and it was just the bants with dad to say, you're a hat, So we passed, you failed, There was always that kind of great banter between me and my dad and my brother. So that was really kind of why we went Reg.
Yeah, I think as well, when you come from that background, it's, we're talking about institutionalizing there in the army. I think you started well before then, realistically, yeah. Didn't it? Right? Especially with the, I think we're very much influenced by the people who we admire, and our brothers, sisters, mums, dads, kind of getting in there. 16 though, that's a young age. You would have had to do boys' time, wouldn't you, before you could ever do anything else? What was that like?
Yeah, so again, the first, as I said about the FC, it was a year, you're around other 16-year-olds as well. So it's very much like that next step. Now, you've got, within that, you've got that kind of military presence. But you've got a school. So within the AFC, you do educational pieces. And as I said, again, I'm not very academic. So, I get bored very easy, especially at a younger age. Sorry, guys, this is ambulance going past. I'm still in that kind of mindset of it's kind of school, so I'm going to kick off. And, it was only because of, for me, having, the full schools or the corporals back then, they kind of picked up that father figure, and they pulled me away and what's going. So there was, there was that element to it. And again, I think that's where it kind of, for me, was having that mentor at the AFC was like my full screws. You know, and I think they could see, you know, really good soldier, just really, really bad tempered and, you know, a bit wayward. You could take from that from what you will, but I think, you know, the stuff that's happened through my junior, younger life played a role to that. You know, the violence, you know, not having that mother figure about, you know, we could sit and analyze that all day long.
I think we're all armchair psychologists at the end of the day. I think it's good.
Go on.
Yeah, I think I think with that, because we were talking the other day, just me and another guy, we were talking that there's this grey area in like the veteran community of people who've done minimum term, really, isn't it? Like 5 years, like it is pretty much minimum term. And then you kind of come out and you've got that double identity crisis, haven't you? Because you're like, yeah, I'm a veteran, I'm part of the veteran community, but I haven't done so much that, you know, I feel safe, kind of. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but you get it, yeah.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, I think, you know, no matter what regiment or battalion or, you know, arms you're in, we had the seniority, and there's always been about this seniority. Well, unless you've done 12 years, you're still a junior, you know. Yeah. And I think there is that, you know, that's institutionalization at some degree, you know, that actually, whether you're a Tom and you've been in 2 years or a Tom that's been in 7 years, you know, it's all that's about seniority. And even when you get out, people, and I've seen this where, you know, blokes that are civvies now, still, and because they've done 22 years, then they're probably way more institutional than I am, and they've got this kind of whole old ethos in their head that actually it's about, you know. But for me, we're individual people. So whether you've done a week, a year, 5 years, 10 years, you still give your time. And I think, you know, we forget about, you know, the training, you know, and all of that, those elements prior to, you know, being a Landstreet, full school, etc., making your way through the ranks, actually gets easier for you because you've got that continuity. But for me, it's short and sharp. Boom, short and sharp, you know, schools. Boom, short and sharp, the military. Then all of a sudden, I've got this identity crisis. And you know, talk about this identity crisis, going, well, actually, who am I? Am I a veteran? Am I a civvy? Am I, you know, I've been out longer than I was ever in. Does that make me just a civvy now? Am I a veteran? But that's, and I think, again, we, you know, if you look at the word veteran, it's if you've done a day's service. And I think I always go back to, I don't care if you've done a day, a week, a month, or a year, or even 10 years. For me, if you give your time and commitment to the, you know, the military in any shape or form, I think, you know, you've got to have that classification as a veteran.
Yeah, I think you get your DNA, don't you? Like, from that. And I think, either way, yeah, exactly like you say, if you've done a day, a week, a month, or your full 21 years, you know, that's still going to affect you. And coming out of that is really, really going to affect you. It's interesting because you pretty much just went straight out when you did. Like, I had a similar kind of spell. So I handed my chit in just before, handed my chit in at the beginning of the year. And I was going to get moved out of the unit, but my boss at the time managed to convince me to do one last tour, which is as you do. So I was on my year-long get-out-of-jail-free, and then I went to Afghan again. And then sure enough, all of the promises that kind of come from that, oh, we'll bring you back home early, you can do your resettlement courses, you get stacks of leave, and you'll have loads of money as well. It's like, all right, great. So that four-month tour turned into like a nine-month tour because people weren't coming out. And then I landed back at the unit, and it was kind of like, oh, shit, we need to get you out. And, yeah, so for me, it was kind of like a big, kaboom, oh, now I'm out. Like, what was it like for you? Like, how did you feel when you first came out? I know that back into that mentality with security, same here, yeah. But yeah, it's kind of like...
Yeah, no, so I think for me, because it was, you know, I remember handing my kit and going around, getting the sign off, and literally, it's like the next day, I'm out, and I'm thinking, am I out? And it was just, it's kind of like, okay. And then, but I, like you said, fortunately, like, I literally went back out. I went out to a whack, you know, about 10 days later. And all of a sudden, you're surrounded by blokes that you were in the reg with anyway. So all of a sudden, you've created this kind of, and I did, you know, it back then for me, 2005, it was predominantly Marines, reg, you know, and a couple of other units or, you know, regiments, but generally, so it was like a click. And again, you're back in the reg, so you've got kind of a CSM or platoon sergeant running as a team leader. All of a sudden, you go back into this routine. So it wasn't like that for me. That transition wasn't really a transition, because you're just going back in. Instead of being around, surrounded by, you know, 300 blokes in a battalion, you're surrounded by 12 blokes in the team. So it's just, there was just a kind of, it's just a change in, you know, the SOPs, etc., which in itself was not bad. But it, again, I just didn't, you know, for me, it felt like that I just jumped out of one frying pan into another. And it was all about, I was driven by money, you know, and I've always been driven by, you know, finances, because, you know, the fact is, that's why we go to work. If we didn't have to work, we wouldn't.
Beats the shit out of being poor, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So again, but like, for me, it's that probably didn't play well for me later on in life. You know, when I'm in my, you know, early 30s, I'm trying to start a career, and I've just got no direction at this point. I'm just like, done all these courses, I, you know, I had this assumption, which is, you know, the mother of all fuck-ups is assumption, that I was just going to fall into a role. And I've been, you know, speaking to, having, you know, worked with a lot of veterans that have done the same, they've kind of done gas plumbing or electrics, or, you know, they've gone and done all these courses with the assumption that they're going to just fall into a role and it's going to be fine. And what you find is that they've spent, you know, they've used all their settled money on doing a gas plumbing course, and all of a sudden they don't like gas plumbing. It's like, I don't like this job. I don't want to be sat under a sink all day. And I think, you know, there's an element in the military, you know, whatever service is actually, you know, and I mean, it's got better over the years, and I've definitely seen an improvement in this, in that whole transition, you know, with the CTP, you know, working with some good firms, you know, to actually identify and doing, you know, insight days. I think, you know, back when I was getting out, there was no such thing as an insight day. Everyone was doing their resettlement, was doing, you know, the Phoenix course out in South Africa. Everyone was doing it to do security, because, you know, it was that era. What I've seen over doing, and again, just kind of jump forward a little bit on,
yeah, know,
my career, is that the one thing that I found was when I started project management and I made a career of it. I moved back to the Philippines for a number of years. I moved back and I realized, you know, there's companies out there that are, you know, being ruthless with the veteran community. Going, well, come and join us. You don't pay for your course, but what we'll do is we'll take out your salary. And all of a sudden, managers going out, and they're earning they're earning good money for the business, but then they're paying to the veterans and the people that have done these courses, you know, low wages, and then also taking, you know, 400 or 500 quid a month from that to pay for the course, which is, if you were to go and do that course yourself, you'd probably pay 2 grand for. They're charging you 10 grand. So there is companies out there that are quite scrupulous. So I set up a company called Y2X, which was its sole purpose was to, you know, to get veterans, whether it's, you know, resettlement or even veterans that have been out and I've struggled into, you know, fulfilling careers. And I've been looking at, you know, coming from a project management space, I looked at project management and program management, but also, you know, all the other areas that can cover, you know, business analysts. So we've kind of built up a framework for veterans. We've got a training plan, worked with some third parties to actually offer, you know, free training. So the likes of Salesforce are really good. They do a lot of technical courses around, you know, their veterans. So start looking at all of these, you know, these big companies that actually offer veterans free training and free certification. But that no one knows that. And this is the bit that gets, you know, really frustrates me, is, you know, the CTP is, you know, with a partnership with some of these companies, but actually I feel that it's not readily known. And I speak to a lot of, you know, guys that are getting out now that, you know, they'll reach out to me, oh, Lee, I'm thinking of getting out, you know, where do you think I should go? And I'm like, well, we need to have a chat, because we need to understand what your personality is, what you're looking for. You know, do you want to be sat in an office? Do you want to, you know, do you want to be out socializing with people? What is your desire with regards to your career? And a lot of them don't know, because they don't understand what a project manager does. They don't understand. And I think that's another thing. There's an education piece that kind of, that last year of someone's, you know, service, is actually, there's a whole education piece around, you know, what these roles are and what the responsibilities of these roles are. But like I said, I think the military is getting better at it, but there's a long way to go. But again, I think it's highlighting, you know, some of the key attributes we have as, you know, former servicemen and women to actually drive our future careers. You know, for me, project management, you know, dealing with issues, risks, and planning is something that just comes second nature to
I think with it as well, and you hit home there about a couple of things. I think I was so surprised by the amount of companies that are out there that on the face, we're really welcoming, they're signed up to the Armed Forces Covenant and everything like that. But yeah, they're just trying to scam you out of money like half the time or just use you as labour. And these are people who you wouldn't expect. Like, we're talking driving schools, we're talking like banks, we're talking everything like that, who offer this free course and then, yeah, just sting you for the next 5 years. Yeah. And I think you come out of the forces so vulnerable, because 90% of the time, whenever you're coming out of the any forces, you come out because you really, really want to get out, don't you? And then you've got all of these different ambitions and dreams and everything like that, which are all kind of like put on you by, you know, people coming in and saying, oh, I did commercial diving was a big one for us. Oh, I did commercial diving. Yeah, oh, it's fucking great. You know, 12 grand course. Wow, 12 grand course. And then not getting any work. You know, it's all right doing the qualifications, but if you don't know how to actually market yourself and everything like that, you're not going to do it, are you?
Yeah, I just on that one, I know, you know, commercial diving is a perfect example of this. You know, it's such a niche, but actually the amount of work globally for commercial divers, you know, you've got your US, you know, Marines, and, you know, and you've got the UK. So you've got these people that have kind of been seafarers, etc. And then you've got people that obviously the amount of work versus the amount of new entrants to that, you know, that job, you know, there isn't that many jobs going for commercial diving. So you've got to imagine, you know, and then all of a sudden you've got 50 people on a course that are paid 12 grand each. Then all of a sudden they're making it in. They're not guaranteeing you a job. They're saying, we will assist you in trying to find a job. Then all of a sudden, all they're doing is sending you to a career fair to sit down and speak to, you know, an oil company and say, well, we're fully manned at the moment. We've got no roles. And I think that there needs to be, for me, there needs to be more analysis around, you know, what other companies. For example, we've recently seen about HGV driver shortages in the UK. Well, actually, you start researching that, you know, it's a couple of grand to your HGV. Most of us in the military have got a C or C plus E. And these guys can earn some really good money. And now that there's a shortage, the salaries for these companies and these drivers is astronomical. And, you know, there needs to be more analysis done, you know, either by the individual or by the units of the CTP to say, you know, this is a growing market in the UK, project program management, technical resources, you know, technical delivery, drivers, or whatever it may be, bricklayers, you know, with the office moving from the year. And I think there needs to be more analysis on that, because we all want to be psyched. If you'd have said to me 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you're going to be a project manager, I'd be like, what's project management? What is that? You know, and you know, I'd have said probably not for me. It doesn't sound like it's for me, but it's been one of those things. And I just feel that, you know, there needs to be a more holistic overview of, you know, what's out there versus what we're being pushed to. And, you know, we have all of these career fairs when leaving the military, and all of a sudden you've got all these big companies that are pushing these jobs, but actually the job market for those roles is really, really small. So you need to be, you know, an expert in that field, and then you remember you're coming out with no experience. But that's not to say that, you know, there isn't a role for you. It just, you just need to be, you know, you spend some time and thought around doing that to make sure that, you know, you've got the right information, you're not being fed, you know, what I call bullshit, and people just trying to sell you the secret. I think the best thing that I've ever done, and for me that is, you know, such a invaluable tool is LinkedIn. You know, and the reason being is that, you know, you have a huge veteran community on LinkedIn. You've got people that you can go and speak to that are maybe in that industry that, you know, have the skill sets and, you know, done it for a number of years. They could give you, you know, and I think if you can network, you can start building up a picture of, you know, what feels like it's suitable, what isn't suitable. But yeah, for me, LinkedIn has been a number one tool, and I want to thank, obviously, for all the assistance of people with me over the years with regards to, you know, getting to that next stage of my career. And to be honest with you guys, most of my jobs have come through LinkedIn. You know, I'm in a great job. But you know, I think my last four or five jobs have been, you know, through LinkedIn and recommendations of speaking to people on LinkedIn.
Yeah, it's that classic case, isn't it? Like, it's your network is your net worth, isn't it? Like, yeah. And you've got to kind of put yourself out there. I think the biggest thing for me, and it's still something that I struggle with now, is like, you just got to get rid of that ego, guys. You know, you just got to say, like, nobody really gives a shit how many tours you did, because you're not like sat in an OP anymore. You're Captain Corporate, like answering the phone and stuff like that. And that can be a tough pill for quite a lot of the lads to kind of swallow. And just on that holistic approach as well, mate, yeah, you just got to find out, what do you actually like doing? You know, you will have been told and influenced and conditioned to think and like and do certain things, like, but not just from the military, this can be like throughout your life really. And then all of a sudden people are coming offering you that really, really like fast and easy way to do something in maritime or in plumbing or electricians or driving. You know, you can get to like, I don't know, you can be in a career for another 4 years or 5 years before you suddenly realize, like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah,
you know. And it's that, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the one word of advice, and you know, I experienced it myself, that ego element is really, really key. Because I, as I said to you, when I done my IT courses, initial IT courses, I thought I was going to go in and earn 70, 80 grand because I've come out of the parachute regiment, you know, I'm a hard worker. No one gives a shit. Honestly, no one really cares what they, you know, and I think, you know, you've got to set expectations on yourself. You know, and I've been, that's what I didn't do. And I've been, you know, got put me into, you know, that's what forced me back out to AFGAB, because I didn't set the expectation myself. I mean, if you set some of your own expectations, and by doing that, by networking, by, you know, just talking to, you know, people that are in that current field, you can set expectations. Go, okay, well, I know I'm going to earn 30 grand in the first couple of years, but after that, I could be up to 45 grand. And put your own expectations on it. And I think, you know, by doing and communicating with, you know, individuals, you can do that. And I think, you know, as I said, I started to plan my career. You know, and I said by the age of 40, I'd be in this position. By the age of 45, this is, you know, and I'm, you know, quite, you know, grateful that I've been able to achieve most of that. You know, I've had ups and downs of it. You know, I still have that mentality. When I was out on Wednesday with, you know, guys from work, and they were like, oh, we're leaving now. This is at 7, 8 o'clock. I'm like, no, let's get some more beers. And the typical army mentality, I'm like, I'll order more beers and they can't leave. So I just kept doing that. I just kept ordering more beers. I came into the table. So we ended up leaving at 11 o'clock. They were absolutely like, we were all stonking drunk. And I'm just like, which is fine, but that's a perfect example of, you know, that military mentality. Now they enjoyed it, but you know, there has been times before where people are going, why are you being such a dick?
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, I still struggle with that. I'm, you know, I've been at the military, as I said, nearly 17 years. No. Yeah. What was it? 2005. 16 years. You know, and I'm still in my head. I'm like, let's get Ming in. And again, it's that institutionalization, because, you know, typically we go out and we go out to get drunk. You know, and it just, you know, you've got to be aware of that. I'm fully aware of it. And, you know, 90% of the time I'm pretty good at it, but it's that 10% that can actually land you in some hot water. So you've got to remember, these guys are most people that we work with in civilian life have never experienced military. You know, they haven't lived, you know, or breathed the military mentality. So you've got to be cautious of that and conscious of it.
Yeah. How do you, I'm curious, like, so everybody has coping mechanisms, but how do you kind of hold yourself accountable to not doing that? I mean, I have a series of like red flags that let me know when shit's starting to maybe relapse a little bit. I'm like, right, okay, I just need to take myself out of this situation.
Yeah, so look, I'm going to be honest with you. I think, you know, with lockdown, it's been made easier because I'm not going to the office. I think because I'm a social butterfly and I love interacting with people, you know, I you know, one, my wife's a really, really good, you know, but she's a good flag, because as soon as I start getting text messages at 6:30, 7 o'clock, going, when are you coming home? That's like, okay.
Oh, you did, you know.
But yeah, so vintage, you know, for me, I still struggle with that. You know, I'm not going to sit and say I'm, you know, perfect, because I don't. You know, I am that person that goes, if I'm going for a beer, I'm going for a beer, you know. And I, so what I try and do is I try and look at, you know, the people that I'm going with. So again, it's not about, you know, picking and choosing, but making sure you've got the right, you know, people that, you know, don't just go for me. I don't go for drinks with people that I actually want to sit around and drink a glass of wine at a nice table. That's not my kind of thing. But I've seen, you know, I've seen before where I've had blokes, you know, that have worked for me, gone out and, you know, got absolutely smashed with a client and just caused absolute mayhem. And I'm just like, no, but the key thing is you know, we all make mistakes. Just learn from it. If you keep making the same mistake, you know, that's an issue, you know. And for me, it's, you know, I've got a lot better with my own, you know, the way that I drink and you know, who and how I'm drinking. So if I'm going out, you know, and I know it's kind of responsible, I will have a glass of wine instead of having two beers, you know, because it's just obviously different drink, affects different people. But it's a difficult one. And I think each individual is different. And I think, you know, try and take yourself out of the situation sometimes, and that's what I do. So I, you know, I try and take myself out of the situation. Sometimes, you know, you do want to go and have a drink with, you know, your team and stuff. And it's just about being, you know, aware of that. You know, and if you are like me, a social hand grenade, you know, just be aware of that. You know, I think as you get older, you know, if you'd have asked me about this, you know, 10 years ago, I'd be like, ah, fuck it, we should get minging. You know, and again, my perfect response to it is if I fucked up the night before on the piss, I'd go back on the piss again because then I wouldn't have to think about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, I've used drink, you know, on a number of occasions as a, you know, as a kind of just get out of jail free card. Well, if I get pissed, it doesn't matter because I'm not really compromised about it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like medicating, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, and again, I think everyone has their kind of coping mechanisms. You know, drink for me would be one of them. But again, as I've got more mature, I am losing some of my traits of, you know, being in the military. I think I'm getting better at coping. It's really, really important that, you know, you're aware of that as a person, individual. And I think, you know, if you don't see it, but other people are telling you about it, I think, you know, then you need to start thinking about, okay, so I'm not really feeling this, but someone, you know, Joe Bloggs is saying to me, Lee, every time you're on the piss, you're an absolute twat. You know, you've got to kind of start looking at yourself and going, okay, do I need to drink? Am I drinking for the right reasons, or am I just medicating? So there's, and obviously, you know, we all go through those trials and, you know, tribulations of life, and, you know, we all cope differently. Drink, drugs, you know, and there's a multitude of other things. Gambling, you know, I know people that, you know, if they've had a stressful day, they go to the casino, but they end up spending, you know, a couple of grand in the casino. We all have different coping mechanisms, and I'm not going to sit here and tell anyone to, you know, they need to go and do this or do that. I think, you know, there is plenty of help out there for people that do, you know, feel that they might, you know, and I'll be honest with them. I attended AA a couple of years ago because I just going in that spiral loop and, you know, going away, doing the 12 steps. Now that doesn't, you know, as much as I wouldn't be say I was an alcoholic, I did have a problem when I had a drink. So actually there was an underlying issue. So, you know, for me, it was really good doing the 12 steps because it made me realize that actually you, as much as I still drink now, I know that actually I just need to, you know, there's elements and times that I shouldn't drink. And it's just being self-aware.
Yeah, I think you hit a nail on the head there, really. It's, you've got to be self-aware. You've got to, like, recognise this. I mean, like, I remember, like, when I first came out, I started having a few snags or noticing that a few snags were happening. I just catch myself like, right, I'm not sleeping at night time. And I'm like, fucking hell, what's going on? I'm just lying awake, like, bang. And then during the day, to try and, I don't know, get to some form of, like, normality, like having a few cans. And then yeah. I'll sleep during the day. And then that came to, oh, well, you know, like, we'll just have a few drinks. Like, I don't drink now, anything now. But that was a long time coming, and you know, a lot of people will usually say along the lines similar to yourself, you know, like, I think I had a drinking problem, and then, you know, I sorted myself out. to me, I didn't think I had a drinking problem. And well, I still don't, you know, to a point. I was never like drunk at work or anything like that. But I just started noticing that, do you know what? This is a slippy slope. If I keep on going down this, then it's not going to end very well. And I think that there is that coping mechanism of trying to distract yourself and trying to, just keep on going. And guess what? It doesn't look like drink and drugs all the time. It doesn't look like heroin. It looks like it can be smashing out the fizz all of the time. It can be getting busied in work all of the time. It can go and climbing. I know people, like, because obviously, you know, we're in a community where, unfortunately, quite a lot of lads and lasses end up taking that route out, you know. And there's a lot of theories around this, and it's just that ultimate escape, isn't it, really? And people will, I don't know, maybe go 20, 30 years just busying themselves with work, and then all of a sudden they hit retirement, and then kapow, it all hits you all of a sudden. And then I know loads of lads who have essentially committed suicide without committing suicide, and that's just getting pissed and going in a car, or going fucking climbing on their own and shit like that. And it's just, you know.
Yeah, and again, you know, just on this, you know, I'd like for this morning about someone who's just, you know, a huge drinking problem, and, you know, he passed away this morning from liver disease. You know, he was only young, he's younger than me, and you just think, you know, and it's just that excess, and it's, you know, as you've already said, you know, the death by misadventure, but, you know, they're, you know, because they need that high, they need someone to, you know, whether that's climbing with no ropes, you know, going out running every day and doing, you know, 50 miles a week or whatever, you know, overexerting themselves on a constant basis, you know, as much as it's fitness, but actually they're not looking after their body with that, or, you know, and it's that death by misadventure. And the one thing that concerns, you know, having gone down that kind of whole mental health route, and, you know, I struggled with my own mental health over a number of years, you know, from you know, security, military, and, you know, childhood, you know, there has been times where I've sat down and thought, you know, and it's death by misadventure, because, you know, you don't really mean to do it, but you kind of do want to do it, but you can't. So in your own head, you're kind of fuzzy, and you're going, well, I'll just see if I can, and it's kind of like that call for help. But again, you know, I've been lucky, you know, to have a kind of, you know, a good support with my wife. You know, and again, she doesn't get it. She's still like, and there's no disrespect to my wife, but she doesn't. But she's there supporting me, you know, when I need to go and have a chat with someone, or when I need to do something. Because, you know, there's no shame in going to say, guys, I need help. You know, it's something that I only recently, you know, in the last couple of years, that, you know, I've been able to turn around and say, do you know what, I do need help. I do need to go and speak to someone. I do, and I've been. Because I've taken away, you know, and we talked about earlier about institutionalization and this whole stigma around being part of edge, you need to be strong, you need to be fearless. Well, actually, I'm a human being, you know, and that's what I'm, you know, and as much as, you know, I do believe that I'm a human being, we all, you know, we all feel some kind of mental health break throughout our lives. There is no problem with saying, do you know what, I'd like to go and speak to someone. And there's just, you know, I've been over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, there's better support that, whether that be via, you know, the government or the NHS, or even through, you know, charities and support services that are available. And I think, you know, I don't talk about specific mental health, PTSD, depression, etc. I just generally, mental health generally, and mental health could be, you know, I just feel down constantly, I'm not fulfilling my, you know, my own desires. That's, you know, and having thoughts, whether it's good, bad or ugly, you know, that is some form of mental health. And just making sure, you know, I find now I do a bit of mindfulness every now and then, and it just takes away all that noise that's in your head, and just go, don't have to stress about it, you know. And that, you know, you will build your own coping mechanisms that are kind of are healthy, and, you know, there is support out there to look at these, you know, these therapies, and, you know, these ways of dealing with, you know, stress and the elements of mental health.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's an important point, that, mate, as well. It's all kind of mental health, because, like, I think one of the biggest obstacles that we have when you need to talk about something is you tend to have that whole, I don't deserve this. You know, I don't deserve, like, like that type of label. And you know, it's intrusive thoughts. That is the thing that should not happen, you know. And when it starts to get like that, then yeah, that's the point where, you know what, we need to speak. But you know, like PTSD is a big thing for me, because originally, like Hollywood, fucking hell, PTSD is like all of a sudden, you know, like a balloon pops or a toddler farts, and then next about you hitting the deck and then seeing fucking everything else like that. That is not it. All right, it might happen, you know, and you know what, there'll be a couple of times where you do that, but that isn't what it's all about. Like it sneaks up on you, some of these things.
Yeah, and look, for me on you know, and again, we stigmatize labels, you know, and we have, you know, we all have these connotations of what PTSD is. You know, the fact is, until you go and see someone professional and, you know, start speaking about this, you actually start realizing, you know, stuff that happened in my childhood has been classified as having PTSD because of stuff that happened when I was a kid. And they're like, well, you've got PTSD for that. I'm like, yeah, but that was, you know, 30 years ago. Yeah, but it still has an effect on you now. And it you know, and another one is that emotional maturity. So because coming from, you know, the background and my emotions and the way that I deal with my emotions and the way that I perceive emotions, you know, and this is mental health, and, you know, and again, it's as much as I understand what sad, happy is, etc. It's, you know, how do I deal with those emotions? You know, you can imagine a free male family, you know, emotions wasn't at the high priority of the
training. Yeah, you didn't sit around over some ice cream and talk about your favourite musical or anything like that, did you?
So again, it's that emotional maturity for me. And I think, you know, now that I spoke to people and I've gone and had therapy and, you know, I've spoke to mental health professionals, it's given me the ability to actually sit there and go, okay, I'm not the only person feeling this, I'm not the only person that doesn't understand this. And, you know, it was key to me in the progression of my career to actually do own it. And I think, you know, the one thing I say to people a lot is own it. You know, it's not a bad thing, you know. Don't ever stigmatize yourself, because I did. You know, I spent many a year going, well, no one understands, no one gets it, so why the fuck would I bother? Why? It's about owning it. And I think, you know, over the last, as I said, 3-4 years, I've really owned that myself and gone, do you know what? I don't care what people think. It's what's right for me. And my family, and you know, that's why I've been able to progress and understand. You know, am I fully 100%? You know, mentally robust and strong? No, guys, I struggled, you know. I'll have good days and bad days, but you know, I now know how to at least identify it, you know, and if I need be cope with it, or you know, reach out for that additional layer of help. And I think, you know, that's what's been really good for me over the last couple of years, is I've been able to excel my professional career because I've been able to deal with my personal and, you know, my own, you know, issues with that. So I think, you know, there's always people there to help. And I think, you know, for me, being able to speak about it, and even speaking, you know, now, I'm not telling people I've got, you know, mental health issues.
Oh, it's fucking hard, man. And it is, because you're kind of putting yourself out there. I mean, when I first started going through all of this shit, I mean, the primary reason why I started to kind of like really annoyingly speak out about it, isn't because I suddenly got a pair of balls and thought, oh, everyone needs to hear about Gaz Simpson. It was because I got diagnosed with PTSD, and I fucking loved war. I loved going out to Afghan. I loved getting stuck in and everything like that. So why the fuck did I? Yeah, I haven't lost a leg. I haven't lost a arm. You know.
Yeah.
What? Why is that a problem? And then that was the trigger that kind of made me realize that, fucking hell, like, if this is kind of bubbling away from this, every one of the lads will have some form of this rather than others. Yeah. And some of them won't be lucky enough to recognize what it is, and then that's when it happens. It's horrible kind of like putting yourself out there. And I appreciate it whenever anyone like kind of speaks up, but that's kind of why I speak up about it, because fucking hell, like if one person, like I only found out a couple of years ago that having like fits on the night time, like going to bed. So I used to like fit every time that I was sleeping. And it wasn't epilepsy or anything like that. Apparently it's all to do with like, you know, it's all connected. And I remember getting pissed one night with one of the lads. He's ex New Zealand artillery, and he's like country risk manager in Afghan and everything like that. And he was like, "Yeah, I get that. Do you get that too?" I was like, "Yeah, I thought I was the only one." Yeah, but it's just like chatting, isn't it? Like, and it's getting people to kind of open up. And I'm like, well, I kind of fucking have to say it now. If ever I hear anybody say something like that, you know, just to try and like almost encourage people to kind of go and get help, because you never want to.
Yeah, no, and I think that's really, really key. And you know, what I'd say to anyone that obviously watches this and you know wants to even discuss, look, I know obviously Gaz, you know, I'm on LinkedIn, guys. You know, more than happy to have a discussion with people. And as you rightly said, if it's to help one person, you know, it's all there. And again, guys, especially around for the careers and the options around that, because obviously it's really close to my heart helping, you know, any form of veteran or, you know, service leaver to, you know, look at what they want to do. I'm more than happy to spend some time with people, you know, and you know, go through the options that are available. And because I have good relationships now with all of the kind of veteran communities within businesses, I can, you know, at least put you in the right direction of people to speak to, or even get you on, you know, specific courses or insight days. I'm more than happy to help anyone that I can.
Yeah, I appreciate that as well. I mean, I'm conscious of the time, but I wanted to speak to you about kind of like what advice you kind of give to other entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs coming into it.
Yeah, no, so look, guys, believe in yourself. I think that's the key one. You're going to get a lot of naysayers, you know, especially with the guys that you surf with or stuff, that generally don't have much information about, you know, are either still in or LA. You're going to get a lot of naysayers. You're going to get a lot of people that say to you, "Oh, do you really want to do that in this climate?" Guys, believe in yourselves, get it done. The one thing is find, if you're going to set up a business or you want to get into a specific area of business, find yourself a mentor. There is a lot of people out there, civilians and veterans, that are, you know, specifically what they do is they just mentor people. And I was lucky enough to have a very good friend of mine now who is my mentor still. And he, an American guy, never been in the military, doesn't know anything about the military, but you know, on a commercial and a business side, he's just very astute. And we've got to know each other. You know, he knows my failings. I'm very open with him. But he's on, if I have a concern in my head about, you know, whether it be work related or, you know, where I'm going in my career, he's the person I go to. And it's about, you know, creating those relationships. And I think it's really, really key, you know, you identify at least someone you can speak to. You know, they don't have to be in the same arena as you, but it's good to have that, you know, that bouncing of ideas. And also, you know, we all sit there and go, am I doing the right thing? Oh, is this, you know, for example, when I set up my first business, I was like, how do I do this? Google. Then all of a sudden I've wasted £400 because some companies mugged me off. You know, when I got to, you know, someone that set up a business and just, hey, how did you go about setting up your business? Oh, it's this way and this way. £150 fully done. I was like, great. Oh, what about an accountant? I need an accountant. And it's, you know, that's what I talked about, you know, earlier on about networking. Really, really key. But guys, just believe in yourselves. And I think, you know, if you've got that passion, that drive for what you're doing, don't let anyone else tell you otherwise, you know. But do utilize, you know, people around you, because, you know, we've all had brain farts where we've gone, this is a great idea, I'm going to plunge. You know, perfect example is I've seen cryptocurrency. Recently, everyone's banging on about cryptocurrency. I've seen a lot of people lose a lot of money over the last, you know, the last year or so on cryptocurrency. So do your homework, do your research. But yeah, do believe in yourselves and you know, the passion that you have for what you're doing.
I like that. I think I heard something, a statement the other day, and it said, you know, we've been around for quite a long time. It is 99.9% probable that somebody has fucked up just the same as what you have and has made the same mistakes. So just reach out to them and find them. Speaking about reaching out, how do people find out about you?
Yes, guys, LinkedIn. You can go on LinkedIn. So if you want to go on LinkedIn, it's Lee McFarland. Just search. Also, if you're going to Google Lee McFarland, put Google me. There's a few links there as well to some of the stuff that I've done previously. You know, there's a couple of videos about Y2X, which is now obviously closed. But yeah, guys, I'm ready and available. So if you do want to reach out and you've got any concerns or you just want some insights, just reach out to me, guys. I'm fully available and I will reply.
Oh, good. Well, thank you very much, mate, for coming on board.
No, thank you.
And yeah, it was really interesting kind of hearing about your story. I think we went into a lot of deep things there as well. But goal setting, re-educating yourself, and kind of like taking that pregnant pause, you know, that's definitely what I'm taking away from this. Thanks a lot, mate.
Thank you. And like I said, guys, reach out if you need anything.
Definitely. Cheers. That's it.